Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Learning to Dance in the Rain at learningtodanceintherain.net. Our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, are you ready for our holidays past events this Saturday?
Not really, but we're going to schedule a little rough, but we're going to be, actually, we have the two events, one in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey.
And I know Melissa and Tom already, they're really excited about hosting the Pompton Lakes, New Jersey holidays pass with Janet Nohavik and Joe Scheel.
Right, and we're going to be traveling up to Massachusetts to be at the holidays pass event there with Joanne Gerber. So we'll be going in different directions, but that's always a nice event and well attended, and people usually get some good evidential readings out of it. One of the things, actually, you had the idea, and I thought it was a good one. So I might want to alert listeners that, as you know, we have the gathering show once a month. And I know you mentioned that it might be a good idea to pick a book that is in the wheelhouse of the things that we discuss. And with plenty advance notice, give our listeners some time to pick up a copy or get it at the library or wherever you can get it, or e-copy, and we can join in on the discussion. I think the first book...
Right, and I think that, well, the first actual book we're going to read is going to be at the February gathering.
Right.
So we're going to start off the new year in the January gathering with a topic of meditation, because meditation is always the main way to get yourself or your mind into the consciousness situation so that you can not only experience this, but also understand it on very special levels. So we're going to start off with meditation, and then we're going to move through a series of books that we will let our listeners know in advance that we're going to discuss that will essentially bring you through the understanding that we do survive our physical death.
And I think that the first book we already picked out, which would be Testimony
of Light, which our regular listeners have heard us speak about this book over and over and over again. The interesting thing about what we've done with this book is that when we first started reading it and talking about it, it had been out of print. And we've spoken about it so much that it's back in print. And very, very easy to get and being stocked by a lot of libraries. So, you know, if you don't want to get onto Amazon.com through, of course, one of the links on the Forever Family Foundation website, so Amazon will send us a donation, and pick up your Testimony of Light through Amazon, you always can check your local library. And if they don't have it, most libraries will order it for you.
No, it's very distressing, as everybody knows, you know, to turn on the news or pick up a newspaper these days. And I heard a statistic that I just couldn't believe, that so far this year in the United States, there have been more mass killings than there have been days so far this year. There have been something like 350 mass killings in the United States. That's one per, more than one per day. I found it so shocking and so hard to believe, even though, you know,
we only hear about the ones they choose for us to hear about.
And, you know, and then as, you know, they start investigating all of these killers, I mean, some have mental issues, you know, and they're deranged. Some, you know, murder in the name of some cause. I mean, I know there was one last week where a guy killed a whole bunch of people that worked in a clinic, in a Planned Parenthood,
right,
you know, clinic. And some, you know, kill and murder in the name of religion, which is the most mind-boggling of it all, you know, because, you know, the religion, the founders' idea for religion was that it was pure compassion and love and connectedness to your fellow man. And here we have people that are killing in the name of their God. I mean, something's gone terribly wrong.
Well, okay, you're going to go back to the same thing. Bibles, and we know there's millions and millions of different Bibles out there, and everybody's, you know, my Bible's the best, mine's the right one, yours couldn't possibly be. Bottom line is every single one of them was written by man. Whether it was channeled or it wasn't channeled becomes irrelevant. We know two things happen. Just when you play the simple game of operator, something somebody says at one end, 5 minutes later at the other end, the thing that's being said doesn't resemble the message that started. And it's the same way when even mediums are channeling information, it's telepathic. Now they're first putting it into their language to speak it. So even if those books were channeled, the information clearly should vary from book to book to book to book to book, because the person who's writing it is the person who's interpreting.
But the books and themselves and the ancient texts do not advocate harming your fellow man.
There are ones that do. They say, because in the event that you have to protect that particular religion, then it's okay to kill. It's the same philosophies that we have, on many levels. I mean, we shouldn't go around killing animals just for sport, yet there are people who do it, and they justify it however they want to justify it. And yet these are people that I'm sure go to church on Sunday or, you know, participate in some sort of a religious thing. You go back to pre-organized religion, and the concept was we are all one consciousness. You don't go and kill something just for the sake of killing it. Either it's going to be your food, it's going to be something. I think the one movie that always stands out in my mind that reminds us all of that is Avatar. You know, in Avatar, they knew they had to honor the world. They knew they had to take care of every little living thing that was on there, and that became so evident in the movie. Yet, they had to eat. And when they slaughtered the food for their nourishment, they thanked the food for being there for them to eat. And take a look at this now. If you look in how we've evolved as a culture, many people still will say grace before a meal or say a prayer before cutting a piece of bread. That's what this all evolved from. And we need to go back to that one consciousness. Why are we saying the prayer on the piece of bread? It's because it came originally from things that were living, and we're grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that if we could only take the spirituality part of all these religions, you know, and follow that, you know, and set aside the dogma, we'd all be in a
you could.
Place.
The problem is that it did start that way, and then it grew away from it.
Right.
I don't know how to get it back. We have
a wonderful guest tonight, Lloyd Auerbach. So we will be going to a break, and we come back, we'll be joined by Professor Paranormal Lloyd Auerbach. So stay with us.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, and you can find them on the web at learningtodanceintherain.net. Bob?
Well, our next guest has an extensive resume. I won't read it all night, but there's a lot of things to cover. I mean, Lloyd is the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations. He's one of the world's leading experts on psychic experiences and ghosts. He's been investigating and researching the paranormal for over 30 years. He has a graduate degree in parapsychology, and he's been teaching courses on the subject since 1983. He teaches online courses and is on the faculty of Atlantic University. He's been an adjunct professor at JFK University. He's the creator and instructor of the certificate program in parapsychological studies at the HCH Institute in Lafayette, California. Of course, Lloyd is the sitting president of Forever Family Foundation. He's on the board of directors of the Rhine Research Center. He's on the advisory board of the Winbridge Institute. And, of course, on the Scientific Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation, he has had so many media appearances, TV, radio, print interviews. You add them all together, it's in the thousands. He's also a public speaking and media skills coach. He's been teaching those subjects in university and corporate settings since the late 80s. And currently he coaches authors, entrepreneurs, corporate execs, and others. He's a professional chocolatier, producing and selling his chocolate under the name Haunted by Chocolate. He's a professional mentalist and psychic entertainer. He performs as Professor Paranormal. And, of course, he's a prolific author. Many of our listeners have read many of Lloyd's books. His latest book is ESP Wars, East and West, and the website is mindreader.com. Welcome again, Lloyd. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
So I started reading your resume, and really there's more to it. So obviously you wear many hats. So when you reflect back on the body of work over the last 30 years, I mean, what aspect of your work has given you the most satisfaction?
Oh boy, that's tough. I think the education that I've done over the years, the work I've done with students, starting at JFK in the 80s and continuing on through today, and seeing a few of my students actually kind of progress on into the field a bit, that's really been the most satisfying, I think.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll look, and, you know, you Google Lloyd Auerbach, and, of course, you know, you get, you know, pages and pages and pages of stuff. I mean, you've been on many different shows, and as I mentioned, you know, countless interviews. And I noticed that a lot of the people that interview you will usually at some point, you know, try to pin you down by asking if you've ever personally seen a ghost or if you've ever personally witnessed, you know, unexplained movement of objects. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the only one not to ask you that, so let me ask
you. Well, you know, first of all, there is, let's face it, there's enormous amount of emphasis put on seeing, you know, like, have you ever seen a ghost? But I have felt and smelled and heard, but I've never seen a ghost. I certainly have seen many, many instances of objects moving on their own, seemingly either because of poltergeist activity, which is psychokinesis from living people, or because of I was at a place where there was an apparition pretty much already established. A couple of bar restaurants that I've investigated over years, we've seen physical object movement there. But I've never actually seen a ghost outside my mind's eye. And it's just because that's not how I process psychic information. I tend to get it more kinesthetically and otherwise than anything else. But I've definitely seen the physical stuff happening. And that's always been as far back as probably even in college, I saw somebody doing some PK.
Right. And when you've witnessed those things, I mean, you take the same, well, you perform the same due diligence, you know, I would assume to rule out, you know, the traditional physical cause explanation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that I like to call myself a situational skeptic. I'm, you know, using skeptic in the actual definition, which is doubter, not disbeliever, unlike what the organized skeptics have kind of changed the term to. And what I mean by that is I do believe in psychic phenomena. I absolutely believe that there is life after death. I absolutely have seen, you know, have evidence, seen the evidence and had cases where apparitions are about the only explanation that makes the most sense, or that ESP exists. All those things to me are real. It's just that when you have an individual instance of a situation, you have to look for alternative explanations. As a scientist, that's your due diligence. You have to do that. And you have to do that if you're trying to help people understand what's going on in their lives as well.
Mm. Well, I mean, on the subject of ghosts, I mean, the perception of a lot of people is that you should be fearful. So, I mean, is there any reason why people should be afraid of ghosts?
Well, the first thing to remember is that ghosts don't carry guns and knives. So you have a lot less to fear from ghosts than you do from living people. And in general, we don't fear living people. I mean, in certain circumstances, we certainly do, and in certain circumstances, you certainly should. But in general, we don't. And ghosts are people, too. They're just deceased. They don't have physical bodies. They can't hurt us like in the movies. You know, fiction and folklore have taken things that are unknown to us or that have a religious connotation to them or are made religious in some way and given them legs of fear, you might say, telling ghost stories around the campfire is probably one of the oldest oral storytelling traditions in humanity, because we can talk about things in the dark, you know, monsters in the dark, and we can talk about ghosts and things that are dead and such, but there's really nothing to fear from ghosts.
Yeah. And, you know, you, I've heard you obviously speak about certain locations that are frequented, you know, by ghosts, and you've also witnessed a lot of otherworldly goings-on, it would seem. So the ghosts, what's the explanation why a ghost would continue to stay in one location as opposed to moving throughout the various realms of existence?
Well, when we talk about one location, you know, there's two ways to look at that. One of them is to say that they're here with us on Earth, you know, in this reality that we call the world. And there are some real reasons, different reasons, why people stick around here, what some psychics or mediums would say are earthbound. They're psychological. I mean, these people are people. Their personalities haven't changed. Their beliefs haven't changed, at least not yet. So they may be here sticking around a house or just here in general because they have concern for us, the living. That seems to be a message we get from a number of mediums who have spoken to ghosts or apparitions who have stuck around, is that we are keeping them here because we can't let them go. They see us in grief. They see us as not wanting to let them go. So they stick around because they are, you know, taking care of us in some respects.
Right.
The other explanations, which we get sometimes from these apparitions, from these ghosts, is that they don't know what's next, so they're afraid. The fear thing continues after death. It's not like they may have even seen a light, which, by the way, we don't always hear from the communication with ghosts who are here. But they may have been religious in life and are afraid to move on because maybe they, you know, are afraid that they'll end up in hell if there is a hell. We have people who say that they just they really want to stay with their home. We see that, hear that in Western culture a lot, is that they put a lot of effort into their world or in their home or their life, and they want to stick around with it. So there's still that connection to the life you actually had, and it all fits in with human psychology. I mean, it's nothing outside the realm of normal psychology. The unfinished business thing is another one that pops up from time to time, but usually it's the unfinished business is being able to say goodbye to the family or friends or deliver a message of some kind in that way. So we have all these different explanations for it. Now, we also think that there's probably some environmental factors that allow people to stick around, because otherwise we'd have a lot more ghosts. It's pretty clear we don't. Most ghosts move on after maybe saying goodbye to their friends and family within a day or so. So there's probably some environmental and maybe even some more spiritual, you know, plan for these particular people, that they have something they have to do when they're here. But they're, you know, they, as far as sticking around one location, so why somebody would stay in a house or a building in particular, that's also psychological. We've had a lot of luck over the years with mediums and psychics communicating with ghosts and explaining to them that they are perfectly okay moving on to either into the other side or the light, or going someplace else. You know, down the street, go visit, if you ever wanted to go on safari when you were alive, you can go to Africa now. The lion can't do anything to you.
Right. Certain freedom that comes with that. You know, you mentioned,
right,
what you mentioned before, we often talk about people who are deceased that are very much continue in the same fashion that they were before in the physical, but I never thought of it, and you just, when you brought up the fact that maybe the grip of religion continues, you know, in that fear aspect. That's something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems logical to me. You know, when we talk about telepathy and psychokinesis, there are a good many people that are fearful of these things and refuse to acknowledge that they exist. And I know I've talked to a mutual friend, Stephen Browdy, you know, and he uh-huh. suggests that one reason may be that if people can use PK for positive purposes, then it would be logical to assume that it could also be used for negative purposes.
Right.
That's something you agree with?
Well, absolutely, I do agree with it. I don't, you know, the real thing here is that what you're saying with psychokinesis is that our thoughts get turned into action. in a fairly easy fashion. In other words, we don't have to use our hands, we don't have to use our strength in that way. And that's that reflects on personal responsibility for your thoughts, not just your actions, but also your thoughts. That's
right.
A pretty scary thing for people, and fundamentally that's, you know, at the root of a lot of the fear. And there's the other fear, which is that other people could do things to you. You know, people have no problem talking about psychic healing. But there's an element of psychic healing. I was just having a conversation with an energy healer today who said, she said, it doesn't matter if the person believes in healing, in the energy healing or not, I can still heal them. I said, yeah, if they want to get healed. And she looked at me and she said, oh, well, yeah, that's true. So basically, it doesn't matter how good a healer you are. If the person doesn't want to get better, if they are invested in being ill, and we see that doctors talk about patients who are like that.
Right.
Those people will not get better. It doesn't matter how good the healer is or how powerful the healer is. Those people will not get better. And you know what? Energy healing is psychokinesis. So if that says that you have to be accepting the energy and accepting being better, doesn't that also say that unless you're a victim and allow yourself to be harmed, you can't, you know, other people's PK is not going to affect you?
That makes sense to me. So we shouldn't be afraid of ghosts, and we shouldn't really be afraid of psychokinesis.
No, you know, if we could do PK, we would. The negative things people do would be countered by our own abilities. You know, we'd be able to fend off any. We wouldn't have to worry about attacks because our unconscious and our conscious mind would just simply fend those off.
Right.
But think of all the positive applications for PK. I've seen things like stereos and TVs go on without being plugged in through psychokinesis.
Right.
So we'd solve all our power problems. That's number one. We could, you know, travel would be just being able to move your car without having any gas in it. If you even wanted to do that, maybe you could fly, but, you know, at least you could move your car without any gas.
Yeah, there'd be a few lobbies that I think that would be coming after you. But
right, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. The in your latest book, ESP Wars, a bit of a departure from some of your other books, and that it focuses on the subject of remote viewing and how it can be and was used on a large scale among competing countries. So I don't want to just assume that everybody knows what remote viewing is, so just give us a little synopsis of what remote viewing is.
Well, remote viewing is a term for a specific use of basically what we call clairvoyance or precognition, in which you are picking up information on a distant target. It's usually going to be a location. It could be a person. It could be an object. You know, technically, it could be a file in somebody's filing cabinet, although that really doesn't work very well. But remote viewing is, the idea is you are remotely viewing or perceiving, because really the best term is remote perception. People get more than just visual stuff. And the remote viewing program that was started both publicly and for the government in the early 70s, originally at Stanford Research Institute, which became SRI International, and then it moved into other organizations, other contractors kind of handled it. But they used remote viewing to look at what the Soviets were doing and even looked at targets for law enforcement from time to time. And they trained people for the government side. They trained people mostly who were within the Army and other branches of the service and even associated with the Defense Department, whereas the public version of the experiments, which did not have military or other international targets, you know, they were doing experiments with remote viewing with people like Pat Price, who was a former police commissioner, and they were using just experiments to see if people could do this sort of thing, not necessarily with any specific purpose in mind. We had a program here in the United States that lasted from 72 to 1995, and the main author of our book, ESP Wars, is Edwin C. May, and he was the program director from about 1985 to 1995. And was associated with the program for almost 10 years before that, in fact. So he's been around, and he's still doing remote viewing research these days. People might have heard the name Joseph McMonagle.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Army's number one remote viewer and still does work with Ed. Angela Ford's another one who does work with Ed. But our book was a little different because our third author, Victor Rubel, who's from Russia originally, was able to get interviews with several Russian generals. He's actually General Alexei Savin, who Ed is meeting with. He may be meeting with even as I speak right now. He's over in Russia right now. Also General Boris Ratnikov, and then General Nikolai Shamroid wrote our foreword. And all of them were associated at one point with the military and the KGB during the Soviet days, and all had done psychic research. Boris Ratnikov, in fact, had been a psychic practitioner himself, and Savin trained a whole bunch of remote viewers over there. And, you know, this is the first book that actually brings to light firsthand discussion from the Russians who were involved themselves.
Yeah, and for those who haven't had an opportunity to get the book yet, ESP Wars, I mean, it's a fascinating look at how serious this was taken and how effective these remote viewers could be. Remote viewing, what's the difference? I mean, if the remote viewers feel like they're at the distant site, what's the difference between that and somebody having an out-of-body experience?
Well, actually, the remote viewers don't feel like they're at the distant site. They feel like the information is coming to them from the distant site. And I think it's kind of, it'd be kind of like watching a remote TV monitor or a video monitor, and that there's a camera at the other location. So when anybody watches a sporting event, unless you're at the stadium, you are doing remote viewing, watching it at home on TV live. And it's that kind of thing. That's remote viewing. I think that's the best analogy. Whereas if we're talking about out-of-body experience, part of you or your consciousness has left your body and has gone to the stadium to watch the game at that location. Mm. And there's a very contextual difference for these guys, plus the way that they communicate with the people that they're working with. There's no sense of leaving the body. And Ingo Swann, who kind of taught people or worked with people to bring out the remote viewing ability, could do both. And he talked about there being a dramatic difference in terms of the way you sense things. Kind of like when mediums who can do psychic readings of living people have a contextual difference for communicating with spirits versus picking up on a living person.
Right. Well, I often wonder if some of these world-class remote viewers, or maybe there have been cases where they describe information coming to them from a discarnate. I mean, was it ever tried where the target is actually somebody that's deceased in the spirit realm? I mean, I would think maybe the process would work among remote viewers.
I know for the government project it was not tried because they were not interested in doing anything with the deceased. There was
I
no life
imagine.
After death.
Yeah. Right. They want information now.
Right, right. I don't know if any of the viewers have done that. I know that certainly Joe McMonagle had a couple near-death experiences. So he's had his own experiences with that kind of thing. And I think Ingo Swann had picked up on some deceased individuals, too, if I recall correctly. But I don't know that that's ever been done, tried in this way.
Yeah.
And then we'd have to have a researcher, I would be willing to work with one of the viewers who'd be willing to try that, but I know that certain researchers would probably never consider doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. So when, I don't know if you still get calls, but I know you used to get a tremendous number of calls, from people who were upset about things that were going on in their home. And, what exactly were they looking for you to do? Were they looking for you to get rid of their ghosts or validate the fact that they weren't crazy, or both?
Probably both in most circumstances. I say that majority of people who've called, and we don't get as many calls or emails these days. I do get emails from time to time, but unfortunately they're from all over the world, and I can't really, it's not like I can fly off to different parts of the country, not because we're not funded for doing that sort of thing. People are looking for explanations. They are looking for validation a lot of the time. But they sometimes have that because there's multiple witnesses involved, and so they kind of self-validate with other people who are also having the same experiences. But they still want to know that someone from a scientific perspective thinks these things are real. But they typically do want an understanding, and it kind of depends. If there's maybe fear, there may be frustration, there may be annoyance based on what's going on. And an explanation may not be enough. They may want to find out how to stop things from happening or going forward.
Right. We're talking with Lloyd Auerbach, and co-author of the latest book, ESP Wars East and West, We're going to go to a break. A lot more to talk about with Lloyd, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, and they could be found at learningtodanceintherain.net. Our Holidays Pass 2015 raffle is quickly approaching with the drawing set for December 23rd. You have just 13 days. Is that right? Did I do that math right? 13 days to get your entries in. The five winners each will receive a one-hour medium reading with one of our Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Tracy Lee Nash, Doc Neil Zapowski, Nancy Marlowe, Destin Livers, or Kathy Tao. Winners are chosen from a computer program that selects five numbers randomly from the pool of consecutive numbers that are assigned to each entry. So enter. Enter often and have lots of different numbers. We have two annual Holidays Past events scheduled this weekend. Joanne Gerber in Natick, Massachusetts, and Joe Scheel and Janet Nohavik team up in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Both events are on December 12th. These will both be small venues, so get your seats now if you haven't already. The last event for this year is set for Friday, December 18th in Oceanside, New York, with medium Angelina Diana, and those 12 lucky guests have taken all the seats, and it is totally filled. So if this is the kind of event that you're interested in, watch for it. We'll have another one scheduled soon. Meanwhile, sign up for our next webinar, How Karma Plays Out in the Afterlife. what our spirit friends are telling us with our own Forever Family Foundation Academic Advisory Board member, Dr. Stafford Betty, on Tuesday, February 9th. All the details are on our events page on Forever Family Foundation's website. Please follow the directions to reserve your seats. Once you register and pay, your registration will go through an approval process. We have discounted the $20 seats to $5 for our members. Watch for additional webinars as posted on the Forever Family Foundation events page. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It is on every page. And because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. And speaking of donations, this time of year, everybody's doing loads and loads of shopping on the internet, even for the smallest item. Please keep Forever Family Foundation in mind. By doing one simple task when you shop, you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon.com, use any of the Amazon links or book links on the Forever Family Foundation website to take you to the Amazon site, and that is the only step you need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us, based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. It's free. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,600 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Red Envelope, Adobe, Drugstore.com, or Home Depot, Old Navy, Petco, Yoga Accessories, and Zales. So please take a moment when you shop to show us that you care. And I am back to you, Bob.
And I am back with Lloyd Auerbach on Lloyd's website. If you want to learn a lot more about all of the things that he does, go to mindreader.com. And, you know, at the break, Lloyd mentioned to me something that I didn't realize is that he has another book that just came out that he is the co-writer on, and it's called Self-Publishing, It Ain't Rocket Science. And, you know, there are many of us that feel we have a book inside, and
yeah,
Grant knocking on our door. So I think that I'm anxious to get this book. I mean, I got a book inside of me somewhere. So
I think everybody does.
So I'm going to.
The first half was written by Richard Wren, who is a mystery writer, mystery adventure writer, and he started his writing career only a few years ago. He's about to publish his fourth book using this method that's in his half of the book. He's turning 90. In January. So for folks, let me give you the math. He started writing when he was 82. He published his first book when he was 85. So it's never too late. And the first half of the book talks about the process of actually getting published for pretty much $0 if you work it right. And my half of the book covers what you need to do in terms of promoting yourself, promoting your books, kind of building an author platform. It has some basic stuff for people who have no idea about what social media is and how to kind of work with it, especially if you're trying to promote some writing that you've got, which is kind of the second half of this whole thing of getting a book out. But it's not that hard to get a book together. And people are doing it, you know, right and left very easily.
All right, so that's Self-Publishing, It Ain't Rocket Science. You can find that on Amazon. So we have a caller. We should take a caller. We've been dominating the show. So is that okay with you, Lloyd? Take a call?
Of course.
Okay.
We have Brian on line 3.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us, Brian. You're on with Lloyd Auerbach, and you have a question for Lloyd?
Yes, Lloyd. I've spent years reading about reincarnation and near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences and the whole field of paranormal. I'm absolutely convinced we're eternal. I always thought somehow if I read enough of these books, I'd know what to do with my day. And so my question is really sincere is that I'm so convinced that life is eternal, but I still can't figure out what to do with my day. So I want to ask you, what are the implications for being an eternal being? How does it change us? Can we use that information to actually make some wise decisions on how to spend our day?
Well, I think it really depends on what you think is behind the process of being an eternal being. You know, there are, of course, different religions and different philosophies take different views of what it means, why we are that way. But a lot of them talk about compassion, about treating people well, and about learning lessons. Many cultures talk about the reason we get reincarnated so often is partly because we need to learn things. And it may also be, you know, frankly, part of it may be pure entertainment for that matter, too, that you want to have experiences and have different kinds of experiences. There's really nothing practical I can say about how to run your day, as I still haven't quite figured that out sometimes myself. But just know that what you do may have implications for you down the road, even if it's just within your own mind, within your own consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. I guess. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I guess another spiritual type answer would be just experience, you know,
yeah.
And not focus on something that you have to do. I mean, that'll come just from the experiences.
Right. I would say the thing that's important to know is to remember is that, you know, there's no reason to if things are not going well for you, there's no reason to try to jump to the next life, because who knows, there might be implications of that.
Right.
You know, at the same time, you want to...
Could I say one more thing? And that is, well,
sure.
I'm not depressed at all. I'm not suicidal at all. But it seems to me that if we have eternity and we've had eternity, that we've been through all of this. We've had eternity to do everything. So I don't see how the universe would be progressing in any direction. It seems like it's just one big Play-Doh, and you get to make something different and maybe make something you made a million years ago or a million years. I don't see how it could be going in any direction if it's eternal.
Well, that would suggest that the universe is stagnant, and it's not. It's expanding. It's changing. Entropy is involved. There's change. You don't know if we're eternal. We don't know when we started. I mean, we may not have always been around. Our spirits may have been, there's nothing that says there aren't new ones being created. So you may be a new person that has perhaps eternity to keep going. And then there are, of course, other planes of existence that might be involved here, too, other dimensions, other things. But this is a point where we really, us living folks, can't really get the information for sure. We all get it secondhand. We get it from mediums. We get it from people who are told by spirits what's next. And even they may not know everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I suspect our perspective might be different after we shed this body.
Yes, well, you know, my feeling has always been people ask me what's next, and it's like, well, we know what the mediums are telling us or the other folks are telling us, but they're maybe telling us things that we can understand. And as someone who has read an enormous amount of science fiction all my life and had these conversations with a few science fiction writers who do believe in life after death, it's like, you know, the next step may be something that we can't even conceive of as physical beings because we have physical bodies.
Right.
And it may be much, much more, much different than we even can come up with, which is why we hear the same kinds of things, the filters that people have.
Well, thanks for calling, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care. So Lloyd, we mentioned, obviously, you've been in front of the media for so many years and, you know, high-profile shows, you know, Larry King and The View and Oprah. And so when you reflect on that, I mean, is the treatment that you receive from interviewers pretty much the same now as it was, say, 25, 30 years ago, you know, in respect to the subject matter? Is the subject matter more acceptable to the mainstream now than it was then?
I think the general public definitely has that. It's been rare that I've had an interviewer that's been any more or less skeptical than they were in the past.
Yeah,
but I will say that the paranormal TV shows have kind of created new misconceptions. If we go back 30 years to when Ghostbusters came out, the best thing that came out of Ghostbusters was all the media people asking one new question, which was, you know, framed by, we know it's not like that. What's it really like? So they were asking, they knew that it wasn't what was in the movie. It was pretty clear it wasn't what was in the movie. We don't see that with the paranormal TV shows. What we see with the paranormal TV shows is people believing everything they see on reality TV, which is unfortunate. And so I even have reporters occasionally ask me, so, you know, tell me about these ghost boxes and all this stuff that you use. It's like, well, we don't use that sort of thing. We don't work in the dark. It's a whole series of new misconceptions that reality TV has created for us, and we have to fight against those.
Right.
On top of the stuff that comes from the horror films, which has always been there.
I know. I think one of the best answer you had, you said somebody asked you about the detectors that you use, and you said the best detector of ghosts is a human being.
Yep. We're designed for this. We're psychic. We're designed for this. Whereas we haven't figured out the signal yet. What are we trying to detect? We don't know what ghosts are made of. How do you detect something you don't know what it's made out of?
Right. So, before we completely run out of time, get us up to date. What kind of online courses are you conducting now?
Well, starting we haven't set the exact date yet. Starting in, it'll probably be the second or third week of January, will be a new run of Introduction to Parapsychology. If somebody wants an overview of the field, that's through the Rhine Education Center, and they can find out by going to Rhine, R-H-I-N-E.org, and on the left you'll see a link that says Education. Just click there, you'll see the discussion of that. I think Paul Smith will be also teaching a remote viewing class, and then I'll be teaching another kind of class later on. I actually just finished teaching a course on the evidence for life after death, for survival, so that was a fun one for me to teach.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be teaching a number of distance learning classes. I always teach distance learning classes. Those are audio-based or phone-based. And I teach those through HCH Institute here in Northern California, but people can take them at their own pace, get them designed in a lot of different ways. And probably the easiest way to find out about those is at the moment my website, mindreader.com, although I may be changing my website next month or two dramatically. Or they can email me at profparanormal@gmail.com. Professor paranormal@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if they want to buy holiday chocolate, you can go to hauntedbychocolate.com?
Well, they can connect with me through that, yeah. I'm
okay.
Only taking special orders right now,
okay.
But they definitely can find that. I will be making truffles all next week, so.
All right, well, as always, it's been our honor to have you on the show. We hope to connect with you again soon, and I encourage everybody to go on the website. I mean, we've only touched on a couple of things, but Lloyd's got more books than I have fingers, I think, at this point. So, and the latest book for you authors out there was self-publishing. It ain't rocket science. So go to Amazon, pick it up. Thanks, Lloyd.
Thanks. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Fran.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Denise, Philip McPhee, Doug Berry, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafada, Patty Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mulan, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, Karen Bryan, Richard Andrea, Tim Donahue, Tom Donahue, Eddie Roll, Kay Malloy, Carol Lessick, Lisa, Karen Gould, Joe Nadal, Joanne Gerber, Betty Kovach, Erica, Tracy Lee Nash, Jean Lash, Vicky Steffi, Rita Springer, David Haith, Ann Hutchinson, Julie Beischelt, Miriam Pierschka, Rachel Scandarian, Kimberly Saavedra, Matt Mello, David Mello, Donna Mello, Judy Pernick, Johnny Boo, Ala, Pat Drance, and Donald Peterson. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.